This lesson might be about a week too late. But there will always be more jackpots in the future. The recent one has been on everybody's mind. Everybody's been talking about it a lot. There's been a lot of discussion on Facebook and stuff. So it's been kind of the hot topic recently. Some of the questions that have come up would be things people say, what's wrong with the lottery? What's the big deal? What would be wrong with gambling in general? And, you know, I don't think I've preached a lesson on gambling before. And so one reason why is that it's not strictly a biblical topic in the sense that there's not a chapter or verse. It's not a place where it's addressed as a topic. So if you just study, and most of my lessons come from just studying and preaching on what I find in the Word, it doesn't ever come up as a topic. But there are times when there are subjects that have to do with daily life that we might want to say, what does the Bible say about this? I'll give you an example of one of those kind of subjects. Recently, we had a lesson on dating. And that's another one of those topics. It's not a biblical topic in the sense that there isn't a chapter where someone describes the courting process or dating and gives you rules for that or how Christians should date or shouldn't date or, you know, all that stuff. So how do we know what to do? Obviously, that's something that applies to a certain aspect of our life. What we do is we look for biblical principles and then we look at how those apply. And I believe that we can do the same thing when it comes to gambling. One of the other things I've had in my mind was growing up kind of some lessons that I heard that I thought really made too much out of some points and drew too hard of a line on different things. And I remember going up and talking with my friends and thinking, I don't know if I agree with that stand that was taken on that. And so I kind of questioned a lot of those things through the years and discussed it with various friends. And so what I want to do tonight is basically present to you principles that are biblical principles that are always true that we should take into account. And we can use these things to consider this subject and related subjects and help us make wise choices that would be in keeping with the principles of Christianity. Because there are several principles that are very much related to this subject when it comes up. And so that's what we want to look at tonight. I would encourage you to study along with an open mind, see what the scriptures have to say about it, and feel free to continue the discussion with me at any time when it's over or whenever you feel like it, if you'd like to talk about it some more. But I'd like to think about some different warnings. Basically, there are several warnings that we're going to find in Scripture that are related to the subject of lotteries and gambling and things like that. And the first one, and this is a big one, especially in this lottery business, what is the appeal of the lottery? What's on the sign? What's the advertising? What is it that gets people talking? It's the enormous jackpot, right? It's the millions and millions of dollars. It's the idea of being filthy, stinking rich, right? That's what gets everybody excited. That's what makes people go out and join in because of that. And recently, the jackpot was, of course, over $1 billion. It's hard to even understand how much money that is. I started trying to look to find some comparisons. If you had over $1 billion, you would have more money. Your net worth would be more than every single NBA and NFL player, every single musician that's currently making music. You'd be wealthier than all of those people. Taylor Swift, you name it, you'd have more money than every one of those people if you had over $1 billion. It is an enormous amount of money. And what a lot of people say is, well, I know my chances aren't great for winning that, but what it does is I'm buying a daydream. I'm buying a fantasy. You know, that you buy the ticket and then for a few days you get to sit around and think, what would I do if I won? What would I do with $1 billion? What would be the first thing I would do? What would be the second thing I would do? What would I do with all that money? And so it's a fantasy about being very, very wealthy. And that, you might say, well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with just the daydream? What's wrong with the idea? Well, what I will say is that Paul is very clear. Turn to me in 1 Timothy chapter 6. There is a warning here about the desire for riches. And the Bible puts a very big warning sign on that. A very big caution label on this idea of being allured by and drawn to the prospect of earthly wealth is something that we are warned about. 1 Timothy 6, beginning in verse 6, says, godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we should be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. So the very concept that a lottery plays on is a dangerous desire. Paul is saying here specifically that the desire to be rich is a dangerous thing. It is a snare. It is a trap. And it works against contentment. It works against being content with what you have. It often leads to ruin and destruction. Now we see that even in winners. This is the surprising thing. But lots of stories have been told about people. You know, they call it a curse or whatever. But a whole lot of people that have won lotteries, not necessarily all of them obviously, but a lot, have ended up surprisingly being bankrupt not long afterwards. And you see the same thing even in people that become suddenly rich, whether it be pro athletes as well. Similar stories in that for a huge chunk of them, just a couple of years after they retire, they're broke completely. And so it ends up being what everybody would think is the biggest blessing possible, this just overloaded with money, more than you know what to do with, often turns into ruin and destruction for the very people that have it. But what about the losers? These are the people who are seeking and longing for riches. And of course, the writer here says that it is a snare. It is a trap. It is the root of all kinds of evil. So there's a danger, is what I'm saying, very clearly. And it pulls us away from Christ. The desire for earthly wealth works against the desire for spiritual things. Look again at verse 10. The love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. So there were some people. Remember, Demas was in love with this present world. And his love for this world drew him away from Christ. And so that is a danger with this desire to be rich beyond our wildest imagination is a dangerous desire. Let me just give you several other verses that fit along this theme. Ecclesiastes 5:10, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. Matthew 6 says, no one can serve two masters. You'll either hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Hebrews 13:5 says, keep your lives free from the love of money, and be content with what you have, because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. And then 1 John 2:15-17 say, do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, love for the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever. And so there's the bottom line is here that the very appeal that lotteries in particular fan the flames of is a desire for riches. And in a handful of verses, the scriptures say over and over and over, be careful with that desire. Be careful with that longing for wealth, because it is a dangerous desire. So that's kind of warning number one. And while we're on it, let me toss out another place that I have seen this appeal. I have seen some of the multi-level marketing or direct marketing, those kinds of things, make their appeal along these same lines. And here's what I mean, but there's some of those products, and this is not true for all, but there are some that their whole approach, and I've sat on the listening end of that, but the whole approach is to say, you shouldn't be satisfied with where you are. And I've watched, you know, they'll say, here's what you're earning today. Here's what you're probably earning in a year. You're never going to get where you want to be on this path that you're on. And wouldn't you like to have more? Wouldn't you like to travel? Wouldn't you like to be able to leave some big nest egg for your kids? Wouldn't you like to have these things? And where you're at now is not going to be enough. So you need to invest in this method, and this, we're going to get you, you know, independently wealthy. And they appeal to all that. And the whole approach of that sales pitch is, you shouldn't be content with what you have. And that they actually try to make the sales pitch in that case tries to make someone discontent. Because if you're perfectly happy with what you have and you have enough and you're satisfied, then you're not going to want to put the time and the effort into doing this thing. And so some of those, that's their whole appeal, is just painting this. In fact, one of them, I went to a website for one of those a friend was involved in. I just went to it. And the picture on the cover photo was this really fancy sports car. And the pitch of the whole thing was how you can make tons and tons of money, you know, by doing this. And then all the all their little sayings that they have are sort of like, you need to aim high and dream big. And it's basically just telling you, you know, you want to and you shouldn't be satisfied with just this when you could reach for that. And it's the opposite of what we find in the scriptures, which say you should be satisfied and content. Does it mean you shouldn't work for more? Not necessarily. And this is where one of those things is sort of a balance. Everybody likes to get a raise. There are people, you know, there's nothing wrong with investing and hoping to get a return. And some of those are even scriptural concepts. So the idea of working to earn more money and those kind of things aren't wrong. But that's where we have to struggle to find this balance between a proper kind of, you know, approach to being successful versus falling in love with worldly things and money. And I find that kind of a difficult line to draw. I think that's just something that we each have to take into account and be careful not to fall into this trap, because clearly we see over and over Old Testament and New Testament warning after warning about the desire for riches. Now, another related concept that is that comes up is covetousness. And covetousness is similar to greed. That first point was about greed. And sometimes the word covetousness is even translated as greed. But it has an even more specific meaning. According to the dictionary, it said, eager to have more, especially what belongs to another. So covetousness is greed, but it's really greedy for what you have. That I'm seeing what you have and I want what you've got. And you remember in the Ten Commandments, the last one says, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant, his ox, his donkey, anything that's your neighbor's. So you should not have this lust for your neighbor's stuff. Notice how serious a problem this is. In Ephesians 5:5, Paul says, you may be sure of this, that everyone who is sexually immoral or impure or who is covetous, that is an idolater, has no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. So being covetous, having a desire for my neighbor's stuff, is something that could keep me out of the kingdom. And really, being covetous is a failure to love. It's kind of the opposite of loving. And Paul says in Romans 13, the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. Any other commandment are summed up in this word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So if I'm loving my neighbor, I'm not going to commit adultery with his wife. If I'm loving my neighbor, I'm not going to murder. If I'm loving my neighbor, I'm not going to take what belongs to him. If I love my neighbor, I'm not going to covet his things. In fact, think about the idea that love conjures up in your mind. If I love my neighbor, then what is love going to produce in me is a desire to be giving, right? It's sort of the opposite. It would produce in me a generosity, a care for his well-being. Love is a sharing, giving kind of thing. This is a taking, desiring, wanting, and those things work kind of against each other. How does this affect, or how does this come into play when we think about gambling? Well, consider the difference between a business transaction and gambling. Let's say that Stephen's got a car for sale. And so I happen to be thinking about needing a car, and I realize that Stephen's got a car for sale. And so I go over and I look at it. It's really nice. I like it. It looks like it would suit my needs. And he's got a price on it, and it's a fair price to me. And so I go and get some money out, and I bring my money, and I give Stephen the money for the car, and he gives me the keys to the car. Who's happy? Is Stephen happy? Stephen's happy. He's got the money he wanted for it. Am I happy? Yep, because I bought the car I wanted. We've exchanged goods, and we're both winners. And that is a classic business transaction or a trade. And if it's a fair trade, everybody wins. Everybody's happy because we both agreed on this. Deal that we made. I just remembered I meant to have that picture there to go with that point. So now we're both. Everybody's happy. There's winner, winner. Everybody wins. And this is true, by the way, because sometimes people bring up, what about investing? What about all those things? In legitimate business dealings, there's lots of winners. So you invest, the company does well, you get a return on that, they get a return. There's no losers. Everybody is successful when things go right. Of course, there's risk that everybody will suffer together too if things don't go well. But in general, you win, everybody wins. In a business transaction, everybody wins if it's done honestly and, you know, it's a fair price and those kind of things. But let's think about another possibility. Let's say that I want Stephen's car, but I don't really want to pay for it. And so what I say, I bet my expedition's faster than your minivan. I don't know that it is, by the way. It probably isn't. But let's say I'm pretty sure that maybe it is. So I'm thinking, I tell you what, Stephen, let's go out on this old country road. And if I can go to the end of that road before you, then you give me the keys to your minivan. And if you beat me, then I'll give you the keys to the expedition. Now, we agree to this deal. Is everybody going to be a winner? There's going to be a winner and a loser, right? And so if at the end of that, I outrun Stephen to the end and now he has to give me his keys and I go home with his car, he didn't win in that deal, right? And so in that kind of thing where I'm getting his property without paying him a fair price for it, even though we would agree up front, you could question whether or not that's something where we both have each other's best interests at heart. Are we both acting in an honorable and loving way, or is that underhanded? And that's really the question that comes up when it comes to gambling. Because in gambling, the only way anybody wins is somebody's losing. If you get together and play and everybody brings their $20 and you leave with, you know, $200, the only way you got that money is everybody else lost the money that they brought, or you lose your money. So everybody's playing to get the other person's money, but that's different than a fair trade business type of transaction. And let's think about a lottery. Sometimes in a lottery or a casino, that the loser is a little harder to see because you're not sitting across the table from them betting on, you know, I'm going to take your money, you're going to take my money, but it's sort of the pot, you know, it's the house. But there are losers. In fact, the money that is won in a lottery, the jackpot, came from everybody that's paying into it, and there are, and they're the ones who, everybody who doesn't win is the loser. And oftentimes, many of them are already in financial trouble to begin with. Here's an interesting piece. This is a quote from a column or something in the New York Times, Washington Post. Lotteries are a sneaky way to use human psychology to soak the less fortunate for billions, at least $70 billion in 2014, according to the North American Association of State and Provincial Lotteries. That's a long name. The numbers underscore the dark side of this gambling sham that's now legal in 43 states. In many states, it's the poorest counties bringing in the most lottery revenue. North Carolina Policy Watch found that counties where nearly a quarter of the population lived in poverty sold as much as $434 a person in lottery tickets. Why? Maybe because most of the lotto machines are in the poorest neighborhoods and the liquor and convenience stores and the delis that are more prominent in low-income areas. And I've seen other similar statistics that basically the majority of people playing the lottery, until the jackpot gets really, really big, then it starts to involve you know, more middle and upper-class people as well. But, you know, the people that just play all the time are very often people that don't have the money to be playing on it anyway. And that's what they perceive to be their only way out of their circumstances, you know, to win that somehow, be the only way they could sort of, you know, improve their lot in life. But very often the people who are paying in that are building up that huge jackpot are people that really shouldn't be doing that with their money. And whose fault is that? Nobody's holding a gun to their head, right? So, I mean, they're freely choosing to do that. But it's what they're hoping for, to win everybody else's money. And that's the money that's been paid in. And that's what when you see that big number, that's, a lot of it is comprised of this. In fact, I saw, a friend who had, just before Christmas was posting about, some financial trouble that he was in and things have been really hard. And then, you know, a few weeks later was trying to find some other people to go in together, and he wanted to find 15 people in Lincoln County and everybody pay $100 to buy, lottery tickets. And he had just weeks before been, you know, questioning how he was going to be able to afford to pay for stuff. And, you know, he's really in a tight spot right now. But this is what he sees as the answer to that. And he was going to spend $100 of his own money, you know, that really he shouldn't be spending. And so it's when you see that side of it, it really kind of paints it to me in kind of an ugly light when you realize, how much of that goes on. Another thing about lotteries and gambling is that it's wasteful, especially when you think of the chances of winning the lottery. You probably have seen and heard these kind of things, the odds on the most latest one. I mean, I think I heard you're more likely to be struck by lightning while being bitten by a shark. I think that would be more likely, because you're like 50 times more likely to be struck by lightning, literally, and 17 times more likely to be killed by a shark and all this craziness. The odds are astronomical. They're so big that people can't process them is what it is. They feel like, so you're saying there's a chance. You know, I can buy in and there's a chance, but that chance is so small that it's practically zero. Literally, if it's one in 273 million, I mean, there's 300 million people in America. So it's literally like they're going to pick one person out of the population of the United States. But it could be me. I mean, it could be you, but the chances are incredibly small. And so what it boils down to is just throwing money away, effectively. Just being not good stewards. Now, is that, is that a proof? And usually when that point comes up, what I can already hear in my mind are the arguments. Well, there's a whole lot of ways people waste money. And that's true. I'll probably waste money. And who would want to have their entire expenditure, gone through to say, is every use of my dollars a wise use of money? I understand that. But it is a principle that we ought to think about, that we need to be good stewards with the money that has been, we've been blessed with. Jesus says in this, right after the end of the parable of the unjust steward, he says, I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth. So this world's money, use it wisely so that when it fails, you may be received into the eternal dwellings. Use the money you've been blessed with in a smart way now so you prepare a place waiting for you. One who's faithful in very little is also faithful in much. One who's dishonest in a very little is dishonest in much. If then you've not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will trust you the true riches? So if I understand that right, we've been blessed now in this life with things, with money, with houses, with various blessings, and we need to be smart with those. We need to be smart in how we use them. We need to use them wisely, because if we are unjust with that, if we're not good stewards, if we are dishonest with it, if we are not using it wisely, then how can we be expected to be trusted with the eternal wealth? And of course, one way to make friends in eternal dwellings would be to, it's the same idea that Jesus says, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Use your money now to do good, to help people so that you have an eternal inheritance. Paul puts it this way in that same chapter in 1 Timothy. As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty nor set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous, ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so they may take hold of that which is truly life. So the biblical principle is that even if we have been blessed with more than we need, which most of us have, then we, to the extent that we've been blessed, we need to then turn around and bless others, be generous, be giving, be ready to share with others. That is the biblical principle. We also see the same thing in Ephesians 4. Don't take stuff, but work and earn and give. And so it's the opposite of stealing. The biblical idea is work, do honest work with your hands to earn money, and then you've got money, and what can you do with that money? You can then go give it to people and help other people, and as opposed to trying to take what doesn't rightfully belong to you. And so that's a biblical principle about it. And that's a biblical principle about how we get money. But honest work and using it for God's glory. Unfortunately, many who play the lottery or gamble in other ways get caught up in it. There's a lot that get addicted. That doesn't happen to everybody, but there are people who will get caught up in it and who will end up spending way more than they should, spending the grocery money, the rent money. I saw where somebody spent their entire life savings on this past lottery. Did y'all see that? She was, there was a lady that was in the news. She spent her entire life savings. I can't remember. I mean, I want to say it was over $100,000, but I don't know, but she spent like, every penny she had, she spent on tickets. And what are they hoping for? It is to be, again, this sort of instant wealth without working and saving, but just some kind of magical, I'm going to turn this $1 into millions of dollars. And I think that we're even warned against that whole kind of approach in Proverbs like this one. The plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to poverty. So the way to build up, you know, what you own is through diligent work. And it's a slow process normally. But those who are looking for the get rich quick scheme, usually that lets you down. Usually that leads to poverty. And you know, as a parent, you guys probably can relate to this. You sort of hate to see your kids waste money. And sometimes, you know, we let them make choices with their money. But when you go to the carnival, the fair, and there's the midway, and there's the guys over there, you know, come play this thing, you know, and like, oh, can I do that? You know, it's like, hey, I'm just going to tell you right now, that's rigged against you. If you want to spend your money there, you know, you've got $2, you want to go throw the little ring on the ball or whatever, but the house is going to win. You're going to lose most of the time. Now, can you win? It's possible to win, but they've got it set up where they win. That's the way that thing works. It's a money-making deal for them. And think about Las Vegas. That city doesn't produce anything that I know of. It is a money-making deal. All those lights, all those, that's paid by people going and losing money for the most part. I mean, I guess you can pay to watch shows and other things, but the fuel for that lights up that spot in the desert is people going there with the hope of winning big and losing what they came with and going home with less than they brought. And that's how they build those enormous, casinos. It's always in the house's favor. And of course, what everybody is hoping is to be the exception to the rule and to be the one that can come out with more than they went with. But, the odds are against you. Just to, you know, which is clear. And what's also interesting is that there's a lot of evil things that are associated with that. You know, for a long time, Las Vegas was called Sin City. I don't know if people still call it that or not. I think they've kind of tried to sort of clean up their image and make it more family friendly in recent decades. But there was a long time when it was considered kind of a seedy, you know, thing, to do. But in general, this is an interesting, part about this discussion is that for a long time, a lot of people have seen gambling as what's called a vice, something that's, you know, kind of a bad thing. In fact, in a lot of ways, it's restricted legally. You can't just open up a gambling illustration. Do you remember in the Dukes of Hazzard, there was an episode where somebody opened up a casino in the back of a tractor trailer. Y'all remember that? Somebody remembers that. So anyway, they're driving around in the back of this semi truck. They're running a casino. And they're on the run from, of course, the law because they're not supposed to be doing it. Well, the whole point was that all these people were glad to get up in there and ride around the countryside on the back of this, you know, where they had a roulette table and all this stuff going on, which wouldn't even work now to think about it. But anyway, it's often been something that has been seen as, you know, underhanded, done in a back room. In fact, there's little gas stations and convenience stores that have those poker machines, and they say for entertainment purposes only, but a lot of them, there's actually a way to make money. I don't know how that works, but somehow you talk to the guy at the register, I guess, and they'll actually give you cash unless they get busted because it's illegal. And sometimes they crack down on those things and they go in there and they bust them for running these illegal gambling machines. And now it's internet gambling, but there's laws about that. Why do you suppose there's so many rules and laws about that? Why does anybody care? Why would there be a law against having a gambling machine or opening a casino in Fayetteville? Why would there be laws against, you know, why is it that Pete Rose is forever banned from the Hall of Fame for gambling on the game that he played in? Because as a general rule, people understand there's something not quite good about that. There's something that's kind of shady about it. And so, you know, it's sort of a negative thing on society. Now, that sort of shifts, you know, and states change. Like right now, it's illegal in Alabama to have a lottery, but it's legal in Tennessee. And Alabama might pass it. And so opinions kind of come and go. And that's not a scriptural point. But it is just something interesting to consider that very often people have these associations with gambling, and it does raise the possibility that somebody could violate their conscience by participating in something that they believe isn't right. Romans 14:13 says, "Let us not pass judgment on one another any longer, but rather decide never to put a stumbling block or a hindrance in the way of a brother." I've told this story before, I believe, but a friend of mine and I, we discussed this very topic in college, and we kind of discussed the arguments about it and, you know, kind of poked holes in some of them and said, yeah, I don't know. And, well, he came to the conclusion that if it's all for fun, if you're not really, you know, being stupid, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. So he put together gambling parties with people from church. And so he invited some of the guys from church over to play cards. And one of them that came didn't understand the kind of games they'd be playing. He didn't realize that they were playing with money. So he got there, but when he got there and he saw what they were doing, he didn't want to be like the odd one out to say, no, I don't feel right doing this. So he played. Well, it caused a big problem. Turns out that guy had had an enormous gambling problem, had racked up, I think, tens of thousands of dollars, had hurt. He had a family, a wife and kids, and they had been working with the elders and they were counseling him and trying to help him overcome his problem. And he'd been doing pretty good until my friend invited him over to the house to play cards, and he didn't really like fall off the wagon, so to speak, but it really hurt his conscience because he knew he shouldn't have done that. He ended up talking to the elders and telling them, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done this, and it caused this enormous stink at that congregation. And I don't know if my friend would put it in his words, but just, you know, understanding that story, he let something that he felt like was no big deal become a stumbling block for his brother by involving him in that thing that he really felt like he wasn't supposed to be doing. And so when you consider all the thousands of games you can play and all the various ways to be entertained, certainly something to take into consideration, a warning about being involved in that kind of thing. Now, here's the warnings that we've seen. Beware of greed. Beware of this whole idea of the desire for being filthy, stinking rich. It's not necessarily a good thing, and it's the desire itself should, like, you know, raise red flags in our minds. Like, that's not necessarily a godly desire to be feeding and fantasizing about, because we're warned against that. We're warned against having a love for material things and a desire to be rich. Beware of this, of coveting your neighbor's things, and of course, taking them in any way that wouldn't be fair, that's not an honorable way of going about it. Beware of being a good steward with your money and not being wasteful, and beware of causing other people to stumble. So those, I think, are some biblical principles. At the very least, these are all biblical ideas, and we should take those into account as we make our decisions about what we do and what kind of things we participate in, and let them guide us. If you would turn to Isaiah chapter 55. I want to end on a positive note. Isaiah 55. The beautiful thing, and I thought about this quite a bit as everybody was fantasizing about what they would do if they won $1 billion. The things in life that are worth a whole lot more than that are available for free, and you don't have to be one of the lucky ones to be chosen to have it. You can have the things that matter the most, and you don't have to, you know, win a lottery to get it. Notice what he says here in Isaiah 55. Come, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. He who has no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money, without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen diligently to me and eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food. Incline your ear and come to me. Hear that your soul may live, and I will make with you an everlasting covenant, my steadfast, my sure love for David. Of course, this was written in the time of Israel, but the same thing applies to us today, that God reaches out his hand to us with a free offer that doesn't require buying a chance or taking a bet. You can have it for free. And it's worth more than all the things that people fantasize they would do with billions of dollars or however much money. And it is the true things, the real blessings, the real valuable things in life. And those are available even tonight for free. And if there's someone here tonight who needs to make your life right, if you need to have your sins washed away, that's free. Why is it free? Because somebody paid for it already, right? The price has already been paid. You can have your sins forgiven. If we can pray with you, if we can help you in any way, let us know while we stand and sing.